Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 422 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 15th of March, 2019, as I record this. So today I am super excited to bring you my 10th anniversary show. And it's crazy to think that the first episode of the Creative Pen podcast was 15th of March, 2009. So I'll be talking about some lessons learned over the last 10 years, and I'm announcing my next 10-year plan. Now, don't worry, I'm not going anywhere on this show, but I have another show launching today. It's definitely been a powerful exercise for me to reflect on the development of this show in the last 10 years, because it is a clear step-by-step progression over years, essentially. Like, there'll be a step change and 3 years later there'll be another step change. So it's not been a dramatic shift from starting a podcast to success podcasting. And this is really true of our writing life as well. And I want you guys to remember this. You don't decide to be a writer one day and then wake up with a successful career the next day, whatever success means to you. And, you know, we spend a lot of time looking towards some point in the future when the thing that we would like to happen will happen, the imaginary film deal or the whatever it is that you think success is as a writer. And it's pretty much the same in anything we do. But I've been reflecting on this a lot, and my point is, hang in there and keep creating and enjoy your creative process. So I'm sharing that today. Now, this is a very short introduction. You can probably hear in my voice, I am super tired. I just got back from London Book Fair this morning. I'm basically broken. Those of you who've ever been to a book fair, I think they're designed to break introverts. And what is hilarious is at London Book Fair, it's the Latvian publishers are brilliant because they have adverts in the toilets going, hello, aren't you happy that you're now alone for a few minutes? If you want to stay, you know, if you want to be alone, come and check out Latvia. It's amazing and very quiet. And they have this introvert beer that they sell. So I always appreciate that at the fair. But I need time to reflect on what I learned at the fair. And also, you have enough of my voice in this episode. So I'm going to keep this super short, and I will share more next week when I've had time to process. There have been some big things in publishing this week and everything, but like, literally, I need to just go and lie in the dark and recover. So I will share more on publishing news and my personal update and everything next week. So this week, the show is sponsored by all the wonderful people supporting the podcast on Patreon. I appreciate it so much. And you will hear in today's show how much I value both our corporate sponsors and also the patrons of the show. In fact, part of the reason I'm so tired, thanks to corporate patron Kobo Writing Life, is I went to a really good party hosted by Kobo. That was super fun. So I do thank all of our sponsors, but also a particular thank you to you if you support the show on Patreon. And of course, if you would like to support the show, you get the extra Q&A every month, which I will be recording next week when I'm less tired. And what am I doing? I am reading the new supporters on Patreon this week. Thanks to D.E. Haggerty, Ramin Sarabi, Jelaine Locke, Patty Galbraith, Robin Pierce, and Douglas Dubois. I really appreciate your support on Patreon. It demonstrates you want the show to continue. And as you hear my 10-year journey, you'll see how important this means to me, what this means to me these days. So you can support the show with just a couple of dollars a month, as I said, and you'll get the full backlist. And in fact, I met someone at London Book Fair who said they had just started supporting the show on Patreon, and they downloaded 2 years worth of backlist questions and were finding them very useful. So thank you to whoever that was. If you're listening, I'm sorry, I've met so many people, I can't remember people's names. But if you'd like to support the show, you can at patreon.com, patreon.com/ The Creative Pen. Right, let's get on with the 10-year anniversary show. So today's show marks the 10th anniversary of the Creative Pen podcast. And I just have to say up front, because this will be quite a long thing. I've been preparing this for several days now, and it's got a lot longer than I expected. It's also blowing a gale outside. So if you hear noise of the storm, that is what it is. It's raining and windy. Even though I'm in my cupboard in my flat, I can still hear it. So anyway, saying that, today is the 10th anniversary of the podcast. The first episode went live on 15th of March 2009. Can you believe it? And there are now 422 episodes with over 3.2 million downloads across 215 countries. I can't even name 215 countries. So podcasting is such a big industry now, and there are lots of courses on how to do it and best practices and how to launch and a lot of detail that can seem overwhelming. A bit like writing a book, really. But like writing or even self-publishing, you can learn as you go and tweak your process over time and outsource as you start making income. And also like writing a book, many people will start the journey and very few will continue for the long term. So I've pretty much done my whole career as making it up as you go along, learning as you go. I recorded the first episode of the show in the spare room of my house in Ipswich, Queensland, Australia. And you can always go look at that on a map. It's basically west of Brisbane, Australia, up on the north coast of Australia there. So I phoned up my interviewee, Rachel Birmingham, on a landline and held it next to, put it on speakerphone and then held my MP3 recorder. At least there was an MP3 recorder. It wasn't like a tape recorder. Held my recorder next to the phone to record the sound. Rachel was the co-author of Five Ingredients, which was one of the first breakout self-published books in Australia. She was all over the news and she was basically famous at that point. And I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I was so nervous, but I did it anyway. And I'm so glad I took that first step, because this podcast is one of the best things I have created in my life. I truly feel that way. It's an important part of my body of work. So what have I discovered in 10 years of the show? In today's session, I'll take you through a journey of the development and share tips along the way, and then talk about my next 10-year slow pivot. Now, even if you don't want to start a podcast, these tips are relevant for anyone who wants to create a long-term business, not specifically for podcasting, because the principles are essentially the same. And you'll see with the development of how I've run the podcast, let alone my business, that things have changed over the years in a larger sense than just like technically. So I hope you find some interesting ideas for your own author business as we go through. So March 2009, first episode, I started doing everything myself. So I did actually start podcasting as a way to build my author platform. I was still working as a business consultant. I wanted professional speaking work. I wanted a way to sell my nonfiction book at the time. I had one book. And also I had a course. I was doing more about self-publishing, teaching people how to self-publish in the very early days of self-publishing. Now, I was determined to make multiple streams of income so I could leave my job and become a full-time author entrepreneur. I was always business-minded. I had a business reason for doing the podcast. It was not just, I just fancy doing this. So I knew I needed more than books to make a decent income. And I still believe that is true for most authors. Most authors are not going to make 100% of their income from book sales. So I had self-published my first book, How to Enjoy Your Job, in 2008, later rewritten as Career Change. But I'd only sold around 100 copies, even though I'd made it onto national TV and radio. So I decided to put all my energy into online marketing, which really seemed like it would have better results for someone who wasn't stocked in physical bookstores. Now, my mentor, Yarrow Starak, had a podcast, still does. In fact, he's been doing it longer than me. And it was one of the main ways I learned about entrepreneurship. Yarrow has been on this show several times, most recently in episode 406, after, I guess, the 10 years of the creative pen, when I talked about that. He talked about long-term success, and he continues to be a model for me of sustainable online business and also living a happy life, not just growth for growth's sake. So I listened to Yarrow's show. I listened to a lot of audio from bloggers in the US at the time. I was commuting for probably at least 90 minutes a day. And so I was learning a lot from audio. I realized that this was a great way to reach people with a message, and I also bought products from people I listened to. So I knew it worked as a marketing funnel. There were very few authors at the time producing podcasts. I think Writing Excuses was going at the time. That was one of the earliest, certainly Mer Lafferty, I Should Be Writing. But there were not a lot of podcasts in general. So I thought it would be a good way to differentiate myself and build an audience over time. I did want to learn, always want to learn, and share my journey. I also wanted to help other people because I had been ripped off in my early days of self-publishing, and I wanted to help people avoid that. And I also wanted to connect with other authors. I basically had no creative friends. I was working in this IT job. I had friends, obviously, but they were nothing to do with the creative industries. And I was deeply lonely in trying to pivot my creative life. I was in this little town west of Brisbane. It was a cultural wilderness. I wanted to meet other creative entrepreneurs, and interviewing them seemed a good way to connect, especially as many of them lived in the USA. And with the time difference to Australia, I was able to do that. So my first tip, and I will intersperse tips throughout this, my first tip is only start a podcast if you're doing it for more than the potential income. And I think this has to be the same with your book. I don't think there's any point in starting to become an author because of any money that might be involved. You have to find it intrinsically rewarding. You have to love doing it first before you ever make a dollar from it. Podcasting takes time to grow just as much as writing books, and building an author brand takes time to grow. So for about 6 months, it was like howling into the wind, no traffic, no listeners, no nothing. And this was back when self-publishing was still a dirty word. It was still very much frowned upon. But then as the Kindle started to take off and things began to change, at least in the USA, and the podcast began to gain traction, I started to get listeners and I started to connect with people and even made some online friends. And in fact, many of my friends in real life are people I met online on Twitter, and who eventually I invited on the podcast and then got to know offline as well. So technically, I was doing everything myself. Learning by doing is one of the most important principles for the independent creative entrepreneur. Stop talking about it and get on with it. I really believe that. And in fact, I still have a note pinned by my desk based on Stephen Pressfield's books, Turning Pro and Do the Work. Quote, when we turn pro, everything becomes simple. So that's a quote from Turning Pro. And then I've added, quit the monkey mind, do the work. And this is because often we overthink everything. We're like, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. Should I do this? Should I do that? What if I, you know, or you just overthink it. Whereas if you get on with it, start doing the work, you will find out quicker whether or not it is for you. For example, if you are considering doing a podcast or pitching for podcast interviews and you're just wondering whether audio is for you, well, give it a go and you'll soon learn whether or not it's for you. So I was podcasting along, and then in September 2011, I left my job to become a full-time author entrepreneur. Now, by then, I had five or six books, I had speaking work, I had courses, I had multiple streams of income. And I've talked about this in my books, How to Make a Living with Your Writing and Business for Authors, and talk about a lot of different streams of income in more detail. But basically, I had book sales. I was doing consulting. You could hire me at that point to do consulting. I had affiliate income, and marketing my business and services was all based on content marketing. I really have done no paid advertising for my podcast or my website over the years. I've done paid ads on my books, but not for the website or the podcast. So people found me, and I was making money because of my content marketing. And people were turning up for the podcast and then moving on to buying books and courses and things like that. So the big tip here is that podcasting is a form of indirect marketing. And I think it's very important to remind everyone of this in a world where paid ads have become much more popular. You can't directly measure income from calls to action in a podcast. So, I mean, you can give a specific URL as we do with, say, draftadigital /pen, P-E-N-N. That is a URL that we often talk about. But you might have heard about draftadigital from this show. Now, you might have just gone to their website or at some point made a decision to check them out because of this show, but you might not have used that link. So podcasting is really more of a brand building exercise over time. People cannot click on a link while they are listening at the gym or driving or doing other things. Like, many of you right now are not sitting in front of a computer. I would say 99.9% of you are not sitting in front of a computer clicking on my links for this show. Now, there are show notes. There are always show notes, and some of you might check those out later and click on things. But it is very difficult to point to a specific percentage of my income that has come from the podcast. But from anecdotal evidence of how many of you connect with me because of this show and buy things because of getting to know me in this way, I think it probably is the lion's share of my business over the last 10 years. And it's brought so many opportunities, I've never really pitched for speaking. It's mostly been through this podcast. And this has enabled me to reach an audience directly without advertising. So I'm so passionate about content marketing. I hope you realize this, especially at this, you know, obsession with paid ads time of life. I love organic growth. I know it's frustrating because it's slow, but organic growth over time through search engine traffic, social media sharing, word of mouth, and that's been amazing. You guys spreading the word about the podcast is so helpful, and I love you all for doing that. It's also creative. I've talked about this before, but doing a podcast is creative in itself, and it helps you think about what you're doing. It's sustainable, it's long-term marketing, and that suits my personality much better than paid ads and focusing on spreadsheets and analysis of data. I just don't do well with that. So I love that we have this alternative way of doing things. Of course, if you're interested in how I'm doing content marketing for fiction, check out my mini course, Content Marketing for Fiction, and I go into content marketing in more detail on the blog and also in How to Market a Book, because it's always been my number one thing. So that's 2011. I was still going, but the podcast definitely enabled me to leave my job. 2013, big shift in 2013. I started doing an introduction ahead of the interview. So up until 2013, so 4 years of interview-only podcasting, and a listener emailed me, and I don't know who this is, so if this was you, thank you so much, but a listener emailed me and suggested I talk about what I found interesting in an introduction before the show. Now, I didn't think anyone would care. I really didn't. I thought people were tuning in for the interview. But it turns out that many of you tune in for the introductions and my solo shows and not always for the interviews. Or you might tune in for the introduction and then listen to the interview if it's on a topic you like. But the regular thing is for the intro. Now, this has surprised me so much. And I, as I said, I didn't think anyone would be interested. But I've expanded this over the years to include more segments, news, futurist things, my personal update, and useful stuff like webinars. And I realised how powerful it is to be able to communicate so personally. Now, I think part of this is also that over the years, I have tried to share openly about my own creative journey. And sometimes I get little emails or tweets that snippets from my personal journey are what connect the most. So the big tip here is voice is powerful for connection. And of course, I did a show on this a couple of episodes ago about why I'm going to be narrating my own fiction going forward, doing more of my own audiobook narration. But people do business with people they know, like, and trust. And if you're connecting with your audience in this way, and again, I'm not very good at email marketing either. I don't particularly enjoy email marketing, but I enjoy podcasting. I like talking to you guys. And I like emailing with you directly when you have, you know, personal things to say, but I don't like push email marketing. So for me, this is a great way that I can share things in a personal manner and connect with people. So it's important that people get to know you, not just your guests. And this is how you build up a trusted brand over time and foster a real connection with your listeners. And of course, the same works with your books. And many people do use email marketing as a way to be personal, or they use social media. A lot of romance authors in particular are very good on Facebook. I'm not good at that either. So you have to figure out how you can connect with your readers and listeners and then try and share personal stuff in a way that is authentic, but still doesn't go over a line. But you do have to connect, because there's so much noise in this world. People need to remember you in order to actually care. So fast forwarding again, June 2013, I started doing transcripts for search engine optimization reasons. So up until this point, I would edit, as I edited the audio file, I would make detailed show notes myself. And it was more of a roundup. It was pretty detailed, but it was not a transcript. So I would, sort of make a couple of sentences out of a couple of paragraphs as we talked. Now, the key, if you want organic traffic for a podcast, is you need to transcripts, because audio is not yet searchable. So when the Google spiders and all the other search engine lot look for content, when people search, they have to find words on a page because they can't search audio and they can't search video. Although obviously what's happening with audio and video is slowly the technology is beginning to sort of transcribe on the fly, but it's not good enough yet. Now, I decided that I wanted to get more traffic to the website, but also more subscribers to the podcast. So I needed to be found on the internet. Now, I've been blogging since 2008, but this was a way to generate, 5,000, 10,000 words in one episode by doing a transcript. And it would be related to my niche, because all my interviews are around my niche. Now, transcription, I've tried a number of different services, and I use speechpad.com. I used to use one specific person, but using a service like speechpad.com means that they can replace people as necessary if people are sick or whatever. So this costs around $1 per minute of audio. So a 45-minute show is $45. And you still have to then edit and format the transcript, which I did myself. And then later on, I'll talk about outsourcing. But that, if you outsource, it might cost another $20, $40 per show. So you could be spending, $80 per podcast on transcription now, plus your own time. Now, I am extremely happy to have transcriptions now. And, you know, accessibility, I've had a lot of people say that, you know, either they are hearing impaired, or they just want to skim read, or they have, you know, one guy told me once that he finds it difficult to listen to sound. And so, you know, some people just want the text. But got to be honest, I do it for the traffic. So transcripts are not for everyone. If you have a podcast, then I know it's expensive, but it's got to be worth the investment. And the reason why so many authors get websites wrong is I'm just saying, maybe you're one of them. You need to be a business powered by a website to make effective use of transcription. So I see podcasts that are just sort of very basic websites with only a couple of comments, you know, a couple of bullet points with what's actually in the show. That is extremely hard for search engines to find. The same way if you're trying to attract people to an author website and you don't have any content that people are interested in, that is just not going to attract anyone. So words on web pages bring people to your site through search, but what do they do when they get there? So I have books, courses, free information, tutorials with affiliate links, as well as an email list you can sign up for that has more of those things. Now, it's all useful, but it's also things that will make me money. So I turn traffic into revenue every day. So I designed the website based on everything I've learned over time. And again, we're talking about 2013 here, and I started in 2009 with the podcast. So essentially, I'd built up an ecosystem where paying for a transcript became worthwhile because it would get me more traffic and that would generate more income. But again, it's not directly measurable. I can't say that putting a transcript on a specific episode gets me X amount more dollars. But if you don't have an associated business model with a podcast or a website, you will fail to capture the benefit of transcripts. And most people don't do them anyway because of the cost, but that then means they don't get enough traffic to justify paying for it anyway. It's very chicken and egg. But essentially, for me, podcasting is content marketing. I get organic traffic of over 700,000 unique visitors per month on the creativepen.com. And many thousands of the words on the site are generated from podcast transcripts. They produce long tail traffic. And what I think is very exciting, they may be even more effective in an age of voice first search, because language is natural and spoken rather than written. So as we move into a kind of voice first arena where people are searching on their home devices, or they're in their smart car and they're searching, or they're, or, you know, talking to their phone or their watch, then it's more likely that podcasts with natural language transcripts will be found because they're naturally spoken. Now, it's interesting because this particular one, I'm not getting a transcript of this. I've written this article. It's almost 5,000 words. And then I'm performing it for you. This is me performing my article. Now, obviously, what I'm saying, it's not the exact words that are on my article. I'm extemporizing right now, in fact. And you can probably tell because my voice would be slightly different when I'm reading to when I'm extemporizing. But it's very interesting to me that search hasn't changed. Like, people think that because we have social media, because we have paid ads, because we, you know, that this is over. It is not over. In fact, there's starting to be a bit of a backlash against third-party blogging. Things like Medium, you know, people are beginning to go back to writing on their own websites because they're recognizing that handing over so much content to companies that are exploiting us all are for data is difficult. So this is why I'm more and more passionate about this as time goes by. This is not over. This may well just be beginning. So again, more on content marketing and how to market a book and my mini course. So as much as I understand how this all works now, it works in hindsight, believe me, which is why I hope this will help you guys. But in February 2014, I did actually decide to give up the podcast. I was spending so much time on the show. I was doing everything myself still, and each podcast took around 5 hours per week. The downloads had begun to creep up, which meant more people were listening, but it also meant the show was costing me more money. So I use Amazon S3 hosting, which is cheap and scalable, but the costs go up as downloads increase, and I was paying probably over $100 a month on hosting on top of the sort of $60 per week on transcription. Well, every couple of weeks, maybe. So if you factor in my time as well, the podcast was getting pretty expensive. So was it really worth it to me? Now, I was still getting the benefits I had aimed for. I was getting connection with other authors. I was learning new things. I was brand building and I had indirect sales, but again, hard to measure. But at that point, I was not earning a big income from my author business. Yes, I'd gone full time, but I had not hit six figures in 2014, and I wanted to. So something had to give. I couldn't work out how I could do it with my time taken up that way. So I think I probably started talking about it at the time, and it was you guys, my listeners, who convinced me to continue. And in fact, it is you guys who still keep me coming back each week. As I said, it can't just be about the money or about the sales. It has to be about loving something. So many people told me the podcast was useful that I decided to monetize it. I would double down instead of giving up. And this is my next tip, which is, if something isn't working, why isn't it working? And do you hate your topic? Have you run out of ideas? Does no one care? Or do you have an audience and it is viable, but do you just need to figure out how to make it pay? What is your business model? And this question, I know many authors are writing for a hobby, but if you want more than a hobby, then you have to figure out your business model. And again, covered in Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur and How to Make a Living with Your Writing, both of which are in audio. And in fact, I narrated Business for Authors, so you can check that out if you would like. So that's when I kind of went, well, you know, is it worth continuing? And I absolutely believed it was. So in May 2014, the first corporate sponsor, Kobo Writing Life, joined the show. And a huge thanks to Mark Lefebvre, who believed that supporting the podcast was worth it, and to Chrissy Munro for continuing to support the show when Mark left Kobo, even though it is a lot more expensive these days, as there are so many more downloads every week. And in fact, if you go back and listen in 2014, Kobo Writing Life had like pretty much every single show. And now it's a lot more sporadic because we have so many more listeners. So it kind of goes both ways. But over the years, I've welcomed new sponsors, all companies who I work with for my own books and can therefore personally recommend. I have had so many pitches from companies that I don't work with and or I don't recommend, so I don't work with them. And I only promote useful things to you guys, things that I use, companies that I work with, people that I trust. And so a big thank you to all the sponsors: Kobo Writing Life, Drafter Digital, Ingram Spark, and Publish Drive, who are a recent addition. And again, I use all these companies, so I can happily recommend them. So big tip here, if you want to monetize a podcast, and this is more for podcasting specifically, but could also work for things like speaking or for nonfiction books. If you want a sponsor, foster relationships with companies who want to speak to your specific audience. Figure out who the best people would be, and possibly you already work with them. And don't pitch too soon. If you do pitch, now people have come to me again, so I haven't had to pitch. But wait until you have a decent audience so you can put together download figures, and only work with companies you can authentically recommend. Your reputation will always be the most important thing for a long-term business. Now, of course, I'm a businesswoman. I'm making a living with my writing and with the podcast and with everything. So I am making money from this. I am making money with my books. So I do give you offers. I do bring companies and webinars and things in front of you, and software and stuff like that, which is because I run a business. But I hope you realize that I everything I promote is generally, well, I say generally, almost everything I promote is stuff I either use myself or I know and trust the person involved. So yeah, and all the people I bring on the show and talk to are because I'm also interested in what they're doing. So that reputation is super, super important. Then in August, so that was May 2014, and then in August 2014, I started using Patreon. Now, Patreon had been around a little before that, but it was still very new, and I felt terrible. I still struggle with asking for help. I struggle with asking for things. I like providing amazing value. Now, the podcast had been free at that point for, you know, 5 years, but a few things changed my mind about asking. So first of all, I read The Art of Asking by Amanda Palmer, and I'm actually one of her patrons now as well. She's one of the biggest creators on Patreon. Now, that's a great book, and it essentially says that people want to help the creators they love. So ask them, and I have done that, and you guys are amazing in supporting me. So I also interviewed Jim Kukroll in August 2014 about his book Go Direct. That's episode 191, if you want to check that out. And we discussed artistic patronage and how creatives have always been supported by people who love their work. I mean, if you go back to the Renaissance, you know, Da Vinci, Michelangelo, people, they could have only done that because of patrons. It wasn't like they made something and then sold it. So I started asking. And what's so funny about things like Patreon, things like book sales, things like website traffic, it all starts slow. So in September 2014, I made $15.88 from patrons. It took a year and a half to tick over $100 a month by January 2016. So it's really, really slow growth. Now, what are we? 5 years later, almost 5 years later, it's over 2000 US a month, which is amazing. So you guys actually make the podcast financially viable. And alongside the corporate sponsorship, this is now a good part of my business. So I will not stop doing the Creative Pen podcast because you demonstrate practically it's worthwhile to you, and also because it is a part of my business that is increasingly financially important. So a huge thank you to all of you who support the show on Patreon. There are, as I record this today, 644 patrons, and the number goes up and down every month as people join and leave. It means an incredible amount because you could just listen to the show for free, but you choose to give a couple of dollars a month to enable the show to continue. And of course, if you do support the show, you get the extra monthly Q&A audios, and I also just put extra stuff on there sometimes too. So the question, oh, and if you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon, patreon.com/thecreativepen. And even if you don't support this show, or you know, you want to support other creatives, there are lots of people now who are doing, putting their art on Patreon. Now, if you want to use Patreon for your podcast or your art or your writing, I think it's easiest if you have an audience already who you already have a reputation for delivering value to and who want to support you. I think if you're going from zero and then trying to do Patreon, you're going to really struggle. And you can see it took me, I mean, also Patreon has got a lot more popular since I started using it in 2014. I am often super early on these things, but you still need a decent audience because only a certain number will join. So just with this show, usually every episode gets around 12 to 15,000 downloads per episode. And with 644 patrons, that's less than 5%. And that return will differ per niche, but it's all a factor of numbers and traffic. Same with affiliate income, the same with book sales, let's face it. So do you have a big enough audience to justify setting up a Patreon? And if you don't yet, well, spend some time doing stuff for free, and then eventually you may well attract an audience. So obviously, at this point, I had the corporate sponsorship and the Patreon, and that is directly measurable. So that can go on my P&L, my profit and loss statement, in its own bucket. And last year, I just checked, 2018, direct podcast income was 10% of my total business revenue. And what I like about that is it's very diverse revenue. But there's no way that is the only financial return. As I mentioned, indirect sales are a huge part of the podcasting business model. There's no way of knowing how many of you have bought my books, my courses, use my affiliate links, signed up for my email list, done one of my webinars. I can't track how much revenue has come through the show. And that's difficult for sponsors, I know, because it can just be brand building rather than direct income. But it all goes together. So I hope I'm giving you a real sense of the overarching value of a podcast. It was never about the money. It's certainly, the money has a bigger part now, but it's also the pride and satisfaction of creating something new in the world every week that helps people. And more of that to come. It was also around mid-2014 that I outsourced my transcript formatting. Now, I mentioned that I had started to pay for transcription, but I was still formatting it all myself. And it takes quite a long time to format. I mean, the blog post associated with a podcast interview, if you're going to make sure it makes sense and edit out some difficult, some ums and all of that, which comes through in a transcript. So mid-2014, see, I just did it again and now I'm really aware of it. But my virtual assistant, the wonderful Alexandra Amor, works with me on a lot more than the podcast. But up until this point, I had done everything myself for the show. I was still writing my fiction and nonfiction books. I was speaking, I was blogging, I was very busy. But by adding some more income to the show, I could also spend some more on the show. And this is a feature of running your own business. You can generally, when you start making a little bit more income, you should probably invest it in the business. And so to free up more time, I passed over the formatting of the transcripts to Alexandra, and she created the first draft of the show with the transcript, the show notes, and also images, which we create with Canva, CANVA.com. So this is, and I've done a really good interview with Chris Ducker a while back on how to work with personal assistants. Outsourcing is a huge deal. And I cover it in more detail as well in Productivity for Authors, which is a little mini course slash lecture thing on, which links in the show notes, or you can go to thecreativepen.com/learn to find all my courses. But basically, outsourcing is so important. I believe you can be a six-figure author without outsourcing. But if you want to grow further, you are going to have to work with a team. Now, many of us work with professional book cover designers, editors, but you may also need, for example, a bookkeeper is one of the first people I hired, virtual assistant, maybe tech help, website help, marketing help. And if you're podcasting, then transcription, formatting, audio editing, all of the above. So the tip here is, if you want to step up your income and move from being an author to running a business as an author, you need to leverage your time. And that means hiring people to help you. Now, I know it's hard because, as I said, you have to invest some money to make more money and then spend some on growing the business. But if you speak to anyone who runs a, let's say, multi six-figure business, they all have help. Now, there's only Jonathan and I, my husband and I, are the only employees in the Creative Pen Limited business, but I work with, I think, about 15 different contractors at this point on different things, not every day, obviously, but on different things. The other tip is if you start working with other people, you have to create a content schedule so you can plan and organize in advance. Now, until I started working with Alexandra, I just made it up as I went along. But when you outsource things, you need to plan, and it helps you organize content. So we use a shared Google Sheet in Google Drive. So that means it's shareable, and we schedule months of interviews in advance. And I'll talk a bit more about that when I share what's happening these days. So fast forward again, June 2015 is when I moved to a weekly show. And prior to this, the podcast was, I guess, every 2 weeks, but pretty much ad hoc. I'd record interviews, stick them out by the when I'd edited them. So I didn't really organize my you know, when things went out. But the big tip here is, in order to make listening a habit, it's best to release the show on the same day on a regular schedule, e.g. weekly. And so I moved to weekly on a Monday morning. And hilariously, the only reason I did this was comparisonitis. So many of you will know the self-publishing podcast with Johnny, Sean and Dave, which is now the Story Studio podcast. And at that point, they had always been weekly. And although I'd started years before those guys with my podcast, they were catching me up in terms of the number of episodes. And I didn't want them to overtake me. So I was like, oh, I need to go weekly or the boys are going to beat me in terms of number of episodes, which is so funny because, of course, now they ditched the self-publishing podcast and kind of started again with another show. And that happens a lot. Do not compare yourself to other people. It's another little tip. But actually, that really helped. And when you compare yourself to other people and make changes in your life that will help you be better, that's a good outcome. I discovered that going weekly at a regular time dramatically impacted the number of subscriptions and downloads. It was a game changer. It made a huge difference. So if you are podcasting, a weekly show at the same time is the way to do it. But also, mid-2015 was when podcasting really was taking off. So there may also have been more listeners around. I guess it's hard to tell. But of course, a weekly show is more time, you know, takes more time and more money and everything. So yeah, you have to weigh these things up. The same is likely true of our books, our emails, our everything we do. I've never managed a regular production and release schedule. I never have. My muse is not good at production schedules. But authors who publish on the same day or send a newsletter on the same day seem to have better engagement than those of us who are more ad hoc. So then also in October 15, I had kind of reached another income goal. We've moved into six figures. And my husband, Jonathan, left his job in September 2015 to start working with the Creative Pen. And because he loves YouTube, he took over the video editing for the podcast, which I had still been doing myself. And yes, I do have a YouTube channel at The Creative Pen on YouTube. And I have been doing that since before the podcast. I've been doing YouTube since mid-2008. I mean, it's crazy, but I have never really liked YouTube. It is a different listenership to the audio feed. I only put interviews on the YouTube channel. So the YouTube audience won't be hearing this, for example. So they don't know me so well. There's not so much engagement. And I only continue doing YouTube because I started, so I might as well carry on. And Jonathan edits it now anyway. If it was me, I would have given it up altogether. I do have a lot of shorter videos and tutorials on YouTube. It is a useful thing to have, but it's not my favourite form of creation. And I'm definitely more of a written word and audio person. So the big tip here is only do a video podcast or a vlog if you love the medium and you consume video as part of your daily life. I just don't watch YouTube videos. I do not at all. I occasionally have a YouTube video on for some music if I'm, you know, getting ready for something, but literally I just don't do YouTube. And the same applies for any platform. It's the same. Facebook is a good example. I don't use Facebook personally, but I love Instagram. So I use Instagram and I'm at JF Pen Author if you want to check out my pictures on Instagram. But This is so important. I think when I'm terrible at doing everything, but I wanted to be on YouTube. Everyone said, oh, video is the way to go. You need to do more video. People are still saying that. And it's true. Absolutely, it's true. If you love video, do video. I don't love video, so I shouldn't be doing it. And I'll be carrying that forward into my new pivot, which I'll be talking about soon. But yeah, I still do have that YouTube channel, but it's definitely not my primary function as such. Okay, so that was 2015. 2016, a year later, in November 2016, I finally outsourced the audio editing and production for the Creative Pen podcast. Thank you to the lovely Dan Van Werkhoven, who does the audio editing for the show. So I did my own audio editing for 7 years. And I can't believe I find it so hard to outsource stuff, but I do. But as soon as I handed this over to Dan, I felt so much better. And now, or at that point, so November 2016, it became that the podcast was the things that only I can do. And I find and connect with interviewees, I research and prepare questions, I conduct the interview, I finalize the blog post, and I record the introduction. Those things are my things. And this is a truly sustainable way to create for the long term. But there's no way I could have afforded this in the beginning. So I'm also really proud of the skills that I've learned around audio. And as I talked about in episode 418, I have been learning more skills around audio. And I think doing podcasting for so many years has helped me with audio production and feel very much happier with audio. So yeah, I absolutely relish doing this myself. I probably shouldn't have done it myself for so long, but yeah, I know it's a kind of money time and also a control freak issue. But yeah, so November 2016, I finally outsourced. So how does the podcast work now? Well, it is a bit of a slick operation at this point. So I plan the show 3 to 5 months in advance. Yeah, I mean, right now, as this goes out in March 2019, we're planned out until September. So it really has become a very popular show to pitch. And of course, I struggle to take pitches anymore because I have so many people scheduled. But essentially, I schedule guests into the content sheet that we have, and we share that schedule. So everyone updates the status of what's happening with each episode. I interview the guest on video Skype. I upload the audio to Speechpad for transcription. Jonathan edits the video and loads the video to YouTube and uploads the edited audio to Dropbox for Dan. Alexandra receives the transcript and formats it into a blog post with appropriate images and links, saving as a draft in WordPress on the Creative Pen. I record the intro and load it into Dropbox every Friday so that Dan can get the stuff done for the Monday. Dan edits the intro into the interview, formats the interview file, uploads to Orphonic to add the metadata tags, and then to Amazon S3 for the hosting, and then adds the MP3 URL into the Blueberry plugin on the blog post. I'm not going to explain this technically. I will have the links in the show notes, and also I have a more detailed blog post on how to podcast, but just giving you an overview, I guess. Then I edit the final version of the blog post, I check the audio, and I schedule for the Monday morning slot. And I usually do that on a Sunday. So then the show goes out on Monday morning UK time, and you download it to your device. So that is, you can tell there's a lot of steps involved in doing a podcast. It's a bit like self-publishing, though. Once you've done it a few times, you get used to it. And outsourcing this means that we all have to coordinate. But importantly, I could still do this myself. If anything happened, I could still do it myself. And I'm glad I can, because I don't want to let you guys down. But a huge Thanks to Dan, Alexandra and Jonathan for making the podcast production so streamlined and making it easier for me to continue with the show. So the big tip here is start by doing everything yourself and then outsource the parts that you want to as you begin to earn money. As with publishing, there are companies who will do all of this for you. You can outsource from day one, but you will pay for it. So if you do have a budget for your podcast, then you can do it all at once. But as with a publishing services company, you may not make back the revenue, as I've tried to tell you about. Which brings us to now, March 2019, I'm still here. So podcasts for authors have come and gone over the years, but I'm still here. And in the same way that authors come and go in a niche or give up writing altogether, and I've seen a lot of those over the last 10 years as well, podcasts are mostly short-lived. And in fact, I have a rule that I don't do interviews with shows that have less than 30 episodes because most don't last. I think if you make it to 30 episodes, you have a good chance of continuing. I know this is harsh, but it's true. And it's the same in any creative industry. Now, my biggest tip here is consistency over time is critical if you want to build a loyal audience, people who know you, like you, and trust you enough to do business with you. That is the same with your books as well. It's the same with anything. You have to love your topic. You have to have so many ideas that you never tire of creating. You have to want more than an income because podcasting is only about making money if you design a sustainable business model around it, in the same way as with writing books. So many people will write one book as a hobby, but if you want to write more books and make money, you're going to have a sustainable business model. You also have to find the process intrinsically rewarding, or you won't be able to sustain it for the long term and you'll get frustrated with the tech. You do have to learn stuff, but I think you gather that. I think it's worth it. So we are almost at my big announcement, but I wanted to kind of reflect and say that it is true. My podcast reaches a larger market and helps more people than my books. And that's okay. So circling back to what I said at the beginning of this, the Creative Pen podcast has now had over 3.2 million downloads across 215 countries. Now, I have not sold a million books yet, and I have only sold, say only in inverted commas, I've sold books in 86 countries. Now, that's pretty awesome, but it's nowhere near 215. So in terms of demographics, the US makes up 60% of downloads, with the UK, Australia, Canada, Germany and New Zealand coming in next. But there are also downloads from different places like Japan and India, Korea, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, the Russian Federation, Israel and Iran, amongst others. So creatives, we are a glorious United Nations of a show, and I just love that. Now, I used to want my books to be everything, but in this busy world, many people prefer to listen or read with their ears than to read with their eyes. And you can sometimes change someone's life more effectively through a podcast or an audiobook than through the written word. And that's okay. Getting your message or your story into someone's brain is the point. Words do not have to be written, they can be spoken. So my podcast is an important part of my creative body of work, just as important as my books, perhaps even more so. And many of you have told me you find the show useful, or that some nugget of information or inspiration has helped you or made you money or just made life easier. And as someone who always wanted to be in the self-help industry, a kind of British Tony Robbins, this makes me very happy. Of course, the podcast is also an asset that drives revenue for my business, and I love doing it. Of course, this show is also an asset that drives revenue for my business, and I love doing it. So the Creative Pen podcast is not going anywhere. I'm committing to at least episode 500, so that's almost two more years, and then I'll review the situation again. If it's still useful, it's all good. But it's not enough for me anymore. Books and travel, announcing my next 10 years of podcasting. So a lot has changed in the author community since March 2009, when the international Kindle had not yet launched, and there was no such thing as KDP Select or Kobo or BookBub or ACX or Vellum or many more of the tools and things we take for granted these days. And I've changed too, and of course I've pretty much shared it all publicly on this site over the years. I started writing my first novel in November 2009, left my job in September 2011, started making six figures in 2015, which is probably when I finally had the confidence to say that I would make it long term as an author entrepreneur. Which brings me to now, March 2019. When I think about my next 10 years, 2019 to 2029. 2029 feels a long way off, but believe me, time flies. I know a lot more will change, but I also know I still want to be an author and a podcaster. These things are part of my creative DNA at this point. But I'm ready to share more of my JF Penn side, which I've talked about over the years and never doubled down on. I want to share the personal stories behind my fiction and also talk to authors about the places that inspire their work. I want to use content marketing to bring people to my books, and I also have some non-fiction in mind for my JF Penn brand as well. I want to build something new, a destination site for people like me. Introducing booksandtravel.page. So you can check it out right now, booksandtravel.page, and that's the full and A-N-D. That is a new website and podcast for people who love books and travel. Escape, curiosity, inspiration, unusual and fascinating places alongside the deeper aspects of travel. Now, there are four episodes available right now in the Books and Travel podcast feed. And if you check in your usual podcast app, it should be there. There are four episodes, two solo shows, two interviews. So my solo shows are Lake Malawi, Jerusalem and Blue Water Sailing, the three trips that changed my life. And the other one is Escape, Reinvention, Curiosity, Challenge, Why Travel? Now, those are, as you can tell, they're kind of more thoughtful pieces. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write a travel memoir in public over time. And eventually that will become a book. I'm also starting on the shadow book and interviewing people about dark side of travel, I guess. And I think because that darker side of me does emerge a lot more. And when I say darker side, I think sometimes people take that the wrong way. That doesn't necessarily mean horror stuff, I guess. When I say darker side, I just mean the more introspective side. They call it saturnine, that side that is more the moon than the sun. And there's nothing wrong with that. You get sunny on with Joanna Penn, and I think my moon side is JF Penn. So interesting that comes out a lot more for me when I travel, because I have more time for introspection. I need to be away from my house in order to think a lot, which is interesting. Anyway, even if you don't read my fiction, you might find the site useful. It's a very different side of me. And I'm also interviewing fiction and non-fiction authors about places they've traveled that inspire their writing, and also topics like walking or cycling or grief travel or anything that interests my JF Penn side. I will not be talking about the craft of writing, publishing, book marketing, or creative entrepreneurship on books and travel. It is entirely around travel stuff. So quite a different market in general. I do have a business plan for that site, and like the Creative Pen, I'll be starting slow and seeing what happens. I have interviews available right now with literary fiction author Orna Ross on Ireland. And Orna is Irish and she's been on the show a lot. So you'll hear a different side of Orna as well. And historical thriller author David Penny talks about Granada and Cordoba in Spain, which are also places I love. So more interviews to come with fiction authors on the places that inspire them, as well as non-fiction authors. And if you listen to the show, please do check out the episodes. So if you do listen to the show, please do listen to those episodes first before you pitch me. But if you do think you might be appropriate for the show, then please use the contact form on the website, booksandtravel.page/contact. And I will be collating people that I'm interested in talking to, and it will be very much around sense of place. So you have to have a book that has very, very strong sense of place, or a book on travel. I'm also going to be really hardcore about having amazing covers and amazing photography, because this is going to be a audio, text and image site. So yeah, that those things are very important. It's also going to be mobile first, so you should be able to enjoy it mobile first. So books and travel will be bi-weekly. So hilariously, even though I said having a weekly show works best, I don't have the time to do a weekly show, another weekly show right now. So I'm going to go bi-weekly for now, and eventually I will go weekly. There is a email sign up for a monthly reading list that will go out on the same day every month because everyone loves book recommendations. So this really is a destination site for books and travel, surprisingly with that title. If you want tech information about how I've set everything up and also a lot more about content marketing, then check out my course on content marketing for fiction. It's still relevant for nonfiction, but you know, this is specifically for my fiction name. And you will hear I introduce myself as Jo Frances Penn. So I'm using that JF, the longer version. You can find my courses at thecreativepen.com/learn. So I have had some, I have already told the Patreon supporters about this. I've told my content marketing course members about this. And the initial response is that the shows are much more personal than this podcast, which I hope that piques your interest. I think I am very personal on this show, but personal about different things. So yeah, if you want to be nosy, go check out some stuff. I would really appreciate a review. I don't ask for reviews often on the podcast, but given, you know, and I would love reviews on this show on whatever podcast app you use, but I would particularly love reviews on the new show. So if you do check out Books and Travel and you enjoy it, I would love some reviews to get things moving. It really helps with discovery, a bit like, you know, book reviews. So I hope you found this mega update useful and that it's given you some ideas for your own creative business. We will be back on track next week with the usual show for the Creative Pen, with the Creative Pen podcast. And yeah, I hope some of you will check out Jo Frances Penn on the Books and Travel podcast. So please do leave any comments in the show notes. You can always go to thecreativepen.com/podcast and you know, find this episode and leave comments, also on social media at The Creative Pen. Or if you have any comments on Books and Travel, the comments are open there as well. Right, happy writing. See you next time. So I hope you enjoyed my solo show today and that it gave you some things to think about for your own author business, whether or not you want a podcast or not. I think the same applies whether it's your writing business, whatever it is. And wherever you are on your author journey, try reflecting on your own development. So whether you started writing a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years, 20 years, however long it's been, think about the milestones on your own journey and how you have grown and changed over time. And yeah, it's important to celebrate how far we've come. So thank you for listening, some of you for many years, and welcome to all the new listeners as well. And yeah, I hope to continue serving you through the Creative Pen podcast. I'm not promising another 10 years, but as I said, I'll make it to 500. So next week, I'm talking to Damon Swade about Verbalize, Strengthen Your Writing with the Power of Words. And you may have seen Damon speak at an author conference. He is a real live wire, and he's just a lovely, upbeat, positive guy who also has a lot of brilliant things to say about the power of words. So back to the writing craft next week. Happy writing, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes, available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.